9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Gas prices could rise even higher after the cyber attack on America's largest fuel pipeline. Plus, if you want to keep working from home when your office reopens, what's the risk to your career?
There's like kind of the corporate speak, and then there's maybe the unwritten rules about how your company really feels about this.
And why more people are getting married on Mondays. It's Tuesday, May 11th. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. China is still the world's most populous country, but its overall population is aging and barely grew in 10 years. New census data shows China's population hit 1.41 billion in 2020, up only 72 million since 2010, with a sharp rise in the percentage of people aged over 60. The demographic situation is a top concern for Beijing, as some economists warn that a shrinking workforce could hurt its future growth. There's new information on the fatal crash of a Tesla sedan in Texas in April. The National Transportation Safety Board is raising doubts that the vehicle's autopilot feature was involved. The agency found that one of the components needed to use that system wasn't available in the area where the crash occurred. The NTSB also says security video shows the owner entering the driver's seat of the Model S car, while local officials had said no one was found in the driver's seat after the accident. Back then, Tesla CEO Elon Musk tweeted that autopilot was not enabled, according to data logs. We're exclusively reporting plans for a new SPAC merger. This time, startup mortgage lender Better plans to go public by merging with Aurora Acquisition Corp at a valuation of roughly $7 billion pre-money. That's according to people familiar with the matter. The transaction could be completed this week. And from the Middle East, the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza said 24 people were killed, including 9 children, mostly from Israeli airstrikes carried out Monday. This following days of clashes between Palestinians and Israeli police in Jerusalem and hundreds of rockets launched from Gaza. Israel's military said it killed 8 Hamas operatives and said that it was looking into reports of children's deaths. We're watching the tech sector today as a technology sell-off that started yesterday on Wall Street continued in Asia today. Investors are concerned about potential inflation and the risk of new regulations, among other things. As we talked about last night, the cyber attack that led to the Colonial Pipeline shutdown highlights vulnerabilities in the U.S. infrastructure. Now it could also impact fuel prices. Energy markets were volatile on Monday in response to the disruptions. Let's take a forward-looking view with markets columnist Mike Bird in Hong Kong. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Mark.
So, Mike, this is happening at a time when gas prices have already been rising. Are we seeing any kind of impact from this so far?
Yeah, we've already seen a bit of a price impact, and also it's coming at a time when gas prices are relatively high relative to recent history. Anyway, you're seeing prices climb very close to $2.99, which would be a 6.5-year high. This is a really huge proportion of the East Coast fuel consumption. You're talking about 45% that this pipeline provides on the East Coast. So the longer this goes on, the more you'll see stockpiles dwindle. So if it doesn't get back online soon, you'll start to see that price impact compound with ongoing shortages.
Mike, while this is a domestic U.S. pipeline, are there potential global repercussions from this?
Yeah, so after we saw the last shutdown of the Colonial Pipeline in 2016, the last big one, you saw EU exports to the US of fuel kick up a little bit, and you'd likely see that happen again in this circumstance. Obviously, things have changed a lot in the US in the last few years. It's much more fuel independent than it was, say, 10 or 15 years ago, but you're likely to see the imports into the US of fuel from elsewhere rise if this continues.
Mike Bird, appreciate it. Thanks. Just ahead, can employees still work from home after their offices reopen without putting their careers at risk? We'll talk more about that after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
After a year of video calls, working in your pajamas, and juggling the demands of job and family, more office workers are being called back in. While many businesses are giving people a choice, others are making it clear that they want you in the office. If you're logging into work from home this morning, you might be wondering, if I stay remote, will it kill my career? There's a lot to consider. Our Work and Life columnist Rachel Feinzig has been looking into this, and she joins me now. Hi, Rachel. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Rachel, hard to believe, I think we talked about a year ago, and as much as people have shunned working from home, a lot of people have embraced it and discovered some benefits they're not eager to give up.
Yeah, it's really true. I mean, I think part of it is we've just kind of gotten used to it, and change is hard. Even for the people who are super excited to get back to the office, I still think that transition is going to be hard. And then I think a lot of people who maybe didn't think they would like this so much have just been like transformed by remote work. I mean, I talked to people for this story who talked about things like walking their kids to the bus stop, being in less of a rush in the morning, working out, having more time for themselves, losing the commute. I think it's been really good for a lot of people.
So companies may say one thing about flexibility and returning to work. It seems like there's a very broad spectrum, but then there's the actual reality. You talk to an expert about how to read between the lines about what your company may be saying or doing. What did they say?
Yeah, that's the dichotomy, right? There's like kind of the corporate speak, and then there's maybe the unwritten rules about how your company really feels about this. So some of the signs to look for that kind of might give you a sense of how serious your company is about remote work, and if they might be kind of changing their tune in the coming months, or, you know, even a year down the line. One thing to look for is real estate. Is your company, you know, getting rid of real estate, getting rid of office space? That could be a sign that they're kind of more committed to this new flexible model of working going forward. Another thing to look for is hiring. Are they onboarding people from like all over the country for fully remote positions, or have they kind of slowly started, you know, hiring more local folks recently? You know, that could be a sign that they're kind of moving back to the office. Another thing to pay attention to is what your boss is doing, not just what they're saying. So, you know, if you're seeing them zooming in from the office, that might be a sign that they want you there with them eventually. And then the last thing is just kind of subtle perks. So if your company is offering things like free lunch for people who come back, you know, that's another signal that is kind of what they're trying to push people toward.
So I think a lot of people are wondering what's at stake here. Can misreading the boss's signals, as you mentioned, be a career killer?
I think it's all about what you value. I mean, I did a piece last year, and it's definitely something we're going to be looking at more too, about kind of promotion rates among people who work remotely. And there is research showing that it can hurt you. You're not as visible in the office. You might not be getting the best projects. You also can actually have more burnout. There was one study, again, this is from a column I did last year, that showed that people who worked remotely kind of felt like they had to be on all the time. That was kind of how they dealt with being less physically visible at the office. And it kind of led to just a lot of burnout and actually more work-life conflict in a way. So, you know, there's definitely downsides to not going back to the office. I think it's a matter of kind of just making sure that you're analyzing everything, looking at all the signs, and then making a decision based on what you value. I mean, some people might just feel like they're okay in their job and they don't need to be climbing the ladder, you know, for the next 5 years. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable choice to make. But you should know kind of what you're getting into and be honest with yourself about what some of the downsides might be about not going back.
And with that said, some people don't want to commute anymore. Some people have moved to cheaper cities. You said we're in a unique moment. I'm wondering if employees have any leverage, or is this a fight that's just not worth pursuing?
I think they have more leverage than ever before. I mean, that still might mean very little leverage in some companies. You know, if the CEO is like obsessed with getting everyone back, I don't know, you know, exactly how much leverage you'll have. But this is, I think, the best moment, you know, in recent years to kind of make this case. And just think about it. I mean, think about your own personal leverage. Do you have skills that no one else has? Would it be hard to hire your replacement? You know, are you in a really revenue generating role where you can kind of point really easily to the stuff that you've done? Has it been a super fluid transition to you working remotely? These are things that definitely might help your case. So I don't think it's a lost cause at all. I think now is the moment to try if you want to try.
Lots of tangibles here. Rachel Feinzig, great to talk to you. We'll stay in touch.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
And finally, after a year of don'ts, brides and grooms are finally getting the chance to say, I do. That is creating a backlog for venues, caterers, and designers, meaning more people are having to be flexible with their plans, with more couples getting married during the week. The Journal's Ray Smith explains.
The flexible scheduling is also a result of this collision of people who were scheduled to get married in 2020 but had to postpone it, and people who were already planning to get married in 2021 and maybe hadn't booked the venue yet. So that's meant that weekends are essentially very hard to get now. And so we're seeing a lot of weddings being planned on days like Mondays or Thursdays. I spoke with the Breakers Palm Beach, for instance, and they basically said that Monday is the new Saturday in terms of wedding planning.
And that's what's news for Tuesday. We're back tonight with a new show. We'll be watching our Future of Everything Festival, now underway. You can take a peek on WSJ.com. There are names you will recognize, including the CEOs of Bumble, Mattel, and many others. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.